Live from the Ghost Hunter Store, brought to you by the Shadowlands, South Jersey Ghost Research, and the Ghost Hunter Store. Here's some paranormal straight talk with your hosts, Dave Giuliano and Marty Haynes.
Hi, everybody. Welcome to the show. I'm going to cut the heartbeats out a little early this week.
Yeah,
we got a packed show here. It's me and Marty right now. We're probably going to have a couple more people from the group popping in.
And welcome back from vacation.
Yeah, thank you. And our special guest, John Ventry. I got that right, John?
Yeah, you got it.
Okay. I was afraid I was going to say it wrong again. He's affiliated with MUFON, multiple state director, right? PA, yeah. Delaware, West Virginia.
Well, you know what? I promoted a guy in West Virginia. I promoted a guy in Delaware. And no sooner did I do that, they give me Rhode Island, Vermont, and New Hampshire to go along with Pennsylvania. So
you should just be East Coast MUFON director then, basically.
Well, you know what? If you look at the conference we're having in 2 weeks, it's called the East Coast UFO Conference.
And hopefully we're going to be there because it's right in Philadelphia.
Yeah. Yep. We'll be there, definitely.
Right over the bridge.
I will drag you out of bed.
But we're not talking UFOs today, per se. But we're talking about 2012. John's also the author of 12-21-12, A Prophecy, and The Day After 2012. He's also been on the Discovery Channel and History Channel, so this is something you probably have seen or heard of, whether you've realized it or not. You've been influenced by something he said. So let's just jump right into it. I live in Philadelphia, so I can't build a bunker underground, but I am storing up ammo and food, only because I think people, regardless of what happens, even if nothing happens, if someone's light bulb blows out, people are just going to go nutso on that day.
Chaos will.
And I'm just
going to
lock my doors and hunker down for a few days.
Definitely.
But now, after looking at your synopsis that you sent us, that's, I don't know what to expect now. I came down and looked at Marty and went, oh, my God.
Yeah.
My best advice for you is that you'll probably be dead.
Well, I hope it would be something quick.
Yes.
Definitely.
But just think about this. If you think about when we find mammoths and saber-toothed tigers and stuff like that, they still have the food in their mouth and in their stomach, you know? So whatever took them out, at the last ice age, which happened to be one cycle back according to the Mayan calendar, that's pretty interesting that the ice age coincides with that. When you think about that, that's pretty interesting that they were eating, grazing, and boom, they're covered with 10 feet of either ash or silt or something from the ocean running over them, and then we find them years later. So, and the same thing with dinosaurs. When you think about it, how do you get a fossil? I mean, a fossil is something that happens suddenly. If you go back and you start looking for, the bones of Columbus. It's not fossilized. I can tell you, your grandfather, your great-grandfather, none of their bones are fossilized. They have to get covered, pretty quickly, and then it becomes fossilized. So, I just bought a home generator for my house from Home Depot, and I'm going to put it in. I bought gas because gas keeps pumping. But, what's the chances? I'm going to have this thing running. Nobody else is going to have heat.
I have to write that down. The gas will keep flowing.
That's why I got the gas one, because, natural gas pushes itself out, and it isn't pumped. It just keeps coming.
Because I bought a gasoline generator. I guess I'm screwed once my gas runs out.
Well, sure.
It's not temporary.
Because the trucks aren't going to be dropping it off at the gas.
You know what the scariest part is? me and Marty deal with maybe demonic hauntings or negative hauntings of that on a regular basis. We've had every time we have someone on that deals with UFOs or anything of this, you guys are scarier than any of the stuff that we face on a regular basis.
We had the Romanex
on, and they scared the crap out of us for weeks.
Mm-hmm. Well, you know what's funny? Because I say the same thing to the ghost hunt people, and I did a lot of conferences with them. I did the Pittsburgh Comic-Con and stuff like that. And I say to them, man, you guys are crazy. What are you getting involved with demonic spirits and these spirits? Because, you know, I was... Was I 15 or so when Exorcist came out, 14, 15 years old? And that scared the crap out of me. And, you know, I don't get involved with spirits, man. And I had the creepiest thing happen to my daughter a couple of years ago. I don't know if you saw it in my book or whatever, because I actually have a section in my books right at the end that's called True Paranormal.
Mm-hmm.
And I've had, you know, we should do a show on this one of these times. I've had paranormal stuff happen my entire life. And but my daughter had the creepiest thing happen to her. It was 2010, April of 2010. And we're going to get into paranormal now because I'm going to tell you this.
Okay, that's all right.
So your listeners will be happy. But get this. You know, I'm on the board of juvenile diabetes in Pittsburgh. I served on their board for 6 years because my son has diabetes. So every year they had this huge gala at the Pittsburgh Hilton. So my son, his girlfriend, my daughter come up. We all go. It's a great time. And I'll give you a little side note. I can't drink. I have two drinks, and I am done. I had three drinks that night. My kids are laughing at me. I'm drunk on three drinks. You know, they're pounding scotch on the rocks down. They have six or seven. I am absolutely drunk, but that's a side note. So we get home. It's probably 11:30, quarter to 12 or so. Everybody goes to bed. And all of a sudden it was probably 3 in the morning, my daughter burst into my bedroom yelling, "Dad, you got to believe me. You got to believe me. I know you're not going to believe me. You got to believe me. You don't know what just happened. Oh, my God." She is frantic, like somebody just tried to crawl through her window, you know, and kidnap her. And so I said, "What happened?" She said, "I couldn't sleep. I went downstairs to get a bottle of water. And there was none in the refrigerator, so I know you keep them in the basement refrigerator, so I went down there." She says, "Dad, I went down, it's dark, and I keep all my UFO, Bigfoot, sci-fi stuff in the basement. You know, it's like a Halloween exhibit." And, you know, so she says already it's creepy down there. And I think I've lost every girlfriend once she saw my basement. But she goes down. She goes, "Dad, I go into the refrigerator," and she says, "I can feel a presence behind me, almost like it's breathing on my neck, you know." She goes, "I get the bottle of water. I go upstairs. I go to my bedroom. I lay down. I no sooner lay down, and all of a sudden, this thing lays on top of me." She said the pressure was incredible, and it hurt. She says as it pressed into her body, she says she could not move. She was, and now she was awake through this whole thing. It's not like she was trying to wake up. She was awake and went to lay down. And she says, so it hurts and it presses into her. And now this is where it gets creepy. She says as soon as it went into her, she can hear all these voices in her head. It was like being in a crowded room, 50 people speaking at the same time. And she says, then this thing pulls out of her. She sits up and she's like, "Holy Moses, what was that?" Right? It happens again. Now, you know, another one happens, and she says, again, it presses into her. She can't move. She moves her eyes, and in the mirror, she sees this dark figure standing in the doorway, like a silhouette of a man or something standing in the doorway.
Right.
And in her head, she hears a voice say, "When you're done with her, I want to try out the other two," meaning my son and his girlfriend in the next room. I mean, I knew when she said that, she didn't make it up.
Right.
Because that's too personal. I want to try out the other two. That's like you coming over my house saying, "Hey, can I drive your Jaguar? And when I'm done with that, I want to drive your Escalade." You know,
totally
impersonal, you know, which may be something that spirits do. They go into people at night, and this is how they feel alive again. But she says then it pulls out of her, and it hurts. And that's when she jumps up, runs into my room, and wakes me up. Now, I live next to a cemetery, you know, so for what that's worth, there's a cemetery next to me. And that's a whole nother story. And I'm not finished with the first story yet, but when I was about 6 years old, I had recurring dreams of standing and leaning against the outside of a house. It was a beige brick house, and I was looking out at the cemetery, right?
Right.
So So now when I moved here to Pennsylvania in 97, I'm looking at houses, can't find what I want. I said, let's go up a notch in price, even though I don't think I can afford it. And so we come to the house I'm in right now. I go to the back door. I open up the door. There's the beige brick wall. I lean against the doorway. I look out. There's the cemetery. Wow. It was the sight I saw as like a six-year-old. So I bought that house, and I've never moved. And what's funny is the company I worked for moved you every 3 years. I spent the last 15 years of my career with UPS here and never got moved. So let me get back to the story. So now we go back and we wake my son up and his girlfriend, and we tell him what happened. No sooner are we talking, the girl turns flushed and sweaty, and she goes, I got to get out of here. She says, something's wrong. I got to get out of this house. And my son and his girlfriend pack up everything. It's got to be about 4 a.m. now, and they leave, right? So then I get a call half hour later. My son says, Dad, you're not going to believe what happened. I said, what? He says, I put my home address in my GPS. I hit home. First I stopped for gas, and then he hit home because he didn't know really where he was. And he said the GPS took them to a cemetery.
Wow.
I'm telling you, that was the creepiest of creepy.
Yeah, forget that would freak everybody out, I'd say.
I don't mess with spirits, man. I don't mess with spirits because I believe in possession and that exorcist thing. I think they're right there, and they're right around us.
Right. Yes, they are.
They are.
Human
absolutely.
Spirits can do exactly what you described, too. That's the scary part a lot of people don't realize.
Yeah, they scare the crap out of me, you know. But then I talk to people like you, you know, who do ghost investigations, and they say, why would you want to do UFOs? I mean, they abduct you, they probe you, they do all these things to you. They take DNA, they take babies, they do all of this stuff. Hey, I got to tell you something funny. My first interview I ever did on the radio is on DVE over here in Pittsburgh, right? And they're kind of a funny station and all of that. And, you know, they start asking me, you ever do an abduction? I said, yeah, I've done many cases like that. And they said to me, you ever get anybody who was probed and all of this? And you know, what they do to them? You know, they did this and this. And I won't tell you some of the things they said, even though we're on the air. We're on the internet. I could probably say it. So, I was actually, you know, I had a good comeback to them. And I said, oh, yeah. I said, you know what happened? It turned out it was a disc jockey. It was like a classic rock disc jockey. I worked with him for quite a while. And I said to him, you know what the outcome was? And they said, what? I said, he started playing alternative rock. They broke out laughing.
Hey, Taryn just arrived, so she's here now.
Hello, John. How are you? Can you
hear me? I don't know if you just heard her. I hear you.
Okay.
All right. Oh, hold on. I have to mute the sounds on the chat board.
All
right. There we go. Okay, I have a question. I'm sure you've been asked this before, but I've been like the 2012 light believer, and I even have a countdown on my phone that I show everybody how many days left because there's 100 days left the other day.
And the calendar.
And
all over the store.
Hey, I got the Mayan calendar hanging up in the store and everything. And
yeah, and if I listen to them, I won't be able to sleep. So I try to, you know,
pay attention. So someone came across. And they saw it somewhere where the Mayans never factored in leap year.
Okay.
Would that...
So you think you just figured it out.
Yeah. So now either scare the crap out of me or prove me right that...
The world should have ended long ago, but it didn't because they didn't factor that in.
All right, so, let me give you the truth on that one. That's a good one, but it's not quite correct. I'll explain it to you. Leap year was created in 46 BC by the Romans, all right? 46 BC before Christ, okay? The Mayan calendar was created somewhere around 986 to 1050, somewhere in that range, either during the reign of Pakal or some people say when they completed the temple of Kokokan, which was in 1050 AD. So now just because they created the calendar, let's say at 1000 AD, so now it goes back every 5,125 years, it goes forward 5,125, and it also, you know, it goes, so there's three different calendars. So you're saying that they didn't fact in leap year would have been correct if they created it prior to 46 BC, but they didn't create it until 1000 AD, And it so leap year was already in place, and so, the calendar, for example, the last cycle was at 3,114 BC until 2012.
Thank you for the history lesson.
Now, I don't know that the Romans spoke to the Mayans,
but no, because I think most people think like the, with the leap year, we're thinking of like a modern kind of invention,
yeah,
or like maybe past couple hundred years. No, I had no idea it went back that far, and now my blood just ran cold because now I'm back on board of the world's really screwed now in December. I got to stock up on more food and everything else.
Yeah. Now, do you live east of I-95?
I live blocks from I-95.
Okay, you're dead.
Okay. It's going to be pretty instant, right? So I can just try to sleep through it.
I read that, let's say a large tidal wave, if an asteroid were to hit or there was some sort of plate tectonics thing and you had like a 1,000-foot tidal wave, it'll go about 30 miles inland, and then it loses all its power. Once it gets inland, it really loses a lot of its power. So you can figure if you're, you know, anywhere 30 miles. I tell people if you're east of I-95, you're dead.
I wonder how long it would take me to sell my house.
Now, I saw you mentioned the Georgia Guidestones, which I had only ever heard of from on the History Channel like 2 years ago.
Yeah.
On Brad Meltzer's Dakota Show.
Yeah.
But they mapped out like safe zones based off the on that same show, and I can't remember where they got them from, but like there was a part of Delaware and Maryland,
the
Delmar Peninsula somewhere, right. Area was supposed to be one of those safe zones. Is ain't true to that, because I moved to Delaware. I mean, it's tax free. It's starting to look good now.
I think the only safe zones are in the along the Appalachian, Catskill Mountains, and the same thing with the Rocky Mountains. Now, there are people who say that the whole Colorado Plateau at one time was underwater, and it rose up a mile high where Denver is. So, and they also say that that could collapse back again, and all of a sudden it drops a mile down and you're covered with water. But to my knowledge, this side of the country, along the Appalachian and Catskills, there hasn't been, you're safe because you're about 3,000 feet above sea level. And that's where I am. I'm actually on the west side of the mountains. So, if a tidal wave came in from the east coast, it's got to get over the mountains to get to me.
Right.
And, if a tidal wave come from the west coast, I mean, it's got to go across the whole country about 2,700 miles before we get to me.
Surge from the river. I can walk to the river. Delaware River, so this the surge coming up the river alone. I'm screwed,
I'm only what, like 5 miles from it.
You could always just go to John's house.
That's right.
Sure, along with 80 million other people looking to head west. But do you have a Sea-Doo or a boat?
We do have a boat.
Well, you know what? To be honest with you, if I was on the coast, and let's say reports came in, asteroid struck in the middle of the Atlantic Ocean, or that there's a mountain over on. Trying to think where it is in Africa, that the last time there was an earthquake, the whole slab of the mountain cracked, and they said the next time there's an earthquake, this gigantic slab of a mountain is going to slide into the Atlantic, and it's going to cause a tidal wave along the entire East Coast.
Wow.
The best way to survive something like that is to get in your boat and drive towards it, because until it hits the shallower water, it goes
right
under you.
You're staying on the top of the wave. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, you're basically,
you're
it'll go right under you, and then unless you're too close to the coast where it just rises, you're dead, but that would really be the best thing to do.
I've been talking, people have been looking at me like I'm nuts about keeping the boat in the water until December, but we've had mild winters, so it'll be okay. It's definitely it's worth having it in there.
You know what, you might want to hide all your supplies in your boat, cover it, and leave it in the water, and then when the time comes, that's the time to get in it and head east into the ocean.
You convinced me already.
Yeah. Now think about the pole shift, which, I don't really believe that much in the pole shift side of it, because, even though Einstein said it's possible to happen.
Well, don't the poles already, the true north, true south, the magnetic poles, they move already.
I'm not talking about magnetic poles. Magnetic poles is that's happened. We know for a fact that that's happened a couple of times, and I think it's, every 175,000 years, the magnetic poles reverse, and we are currently at the weakest point with the magnetic poles right now. And 2012, 2013 are supposed to have the largest solar flares, in quite a while. So
I saw the NASA report on that, and I made sure I posted that on Facebook for everyone too.
Yeah, but you know, that's the magnetic poles, which you know that's something to think about too. You ever watch the movie Walking Dead on AMC?
Yeah.
It's a great movie. I think it comes out, it's a show on AMC. I think season 3 starts in about a week or two weeks. But think about that scenario where you have no power, I mean without the zombies, but so let's say it's just the solar flare, magnetic field's too weak or reverses, and we lose the entire power grid and satellites. You got no cell phones, no TV, no electronics, no electricity at all. I've got my gas generator, which may or may not work if the components don't get fried from a sun's flare. You know, it may not work at all.
Right, that'd be almost like an EMF or EM burst,
yeah.
Right?
Yeah, it would be the same thing. So my thing may not work either, with a generator. But either way, I get, 800 neighbors are going to show up to my house because they're cold. So
801.
Yeah, so that doesn't help. But, you think about that scenario, and that's real possible. And, I tell you what, though. Like, people say, oh, come on, nothing's going to happen. That's Y2K. It's all baloney. Okay, maybe it is. But now you explain to me why the president put last December in the National Defense Bill that you can arrest Americans on American soil without a hearing and hold them indefinitely if they're suspected of terrorism. You tell me why the Homeland Security just bought 450 million hollow point shells. And Homeland Security's explanation that it was 5 years worth of target practice shells is baloney.
Yeah, preparing for something.
I don't shoot hollow point shells. They're too expensive. I buy the cheap bullets for target practice.
That's what I do too.
Yeah. Even Social Security went out and bought 175 million shells. I don't know if they're going to shoot all the old people and get us out of all of the debt we have.
Now, one thing I didn't realize, I was reading in here with the Frozen Ark project at the University of Nottingham. I had no idea people were collecting DNA samples and storing them now. I knew about the seed vaults and stuff, but DNA samples...
Yeah, you look at the whole scenario with this stuff, and, you've got over in England, they've been collecting DNA samples for quite a while. So you know what would have been cool if you did a movie, another movie, or even that 2012 movie? Instead of bringing two of every animal species on the boat, they should have just brought vials of DNA labeled. And that would be the modern way of doing Noah's Ark. You just got a wall full of vials saying, lions, tigers, bears, elephants, and stuff like that. But they didn't think of that. They wanted the effect of showing the animals come on the ship. But the other thing I wanted to say with the pole shift, which happened, I believe that happened in that 2012 movie, would be where the entire surface of the Earth slides. We're spinning on the magma right now at 1,000 miles an hour. So, and Einstein says it's possible for the surface to take a slide, and it doesn't have to be west, it could be southwest, and that'll make the oceans pour over the land. It's a possibility. So that was the other part of that, not just the magnetic pole, there's actually the physical pole. And here's something if you're an environmentalist, and, you get all upset about the melting of the Arctic Circle in the North Pole. That is melting. There's no doubt about it. It's melting. Greenland's melting. All of that.
Hey, the permafrost and Greenland's gone.
As a side note, in our lifetime, we're going to be able to take a Carnival cruise along the Northwest Passage from Boston to Alaska. But that's a side note. But here's the thing as far as the poles go. The South Pole, Antarctica, is getting thicker. It's not melting. Only the North is melting, not the South. The South is getting thicker in the center. And if you look at Antarctica, it's not exactly on the bottom of the Earth. It's off to the side. So we're spinning, and there's a wobble to the way we spin.
Right.
Now, let's think about a top that's weighted on the top or weighted on the bottom more than the top.
I already had that pictured in my head of us, the wheels.
Yeah, I mean, if you take a top or something and you spin it and it's heavier on the bottom, gravity will make it go to that heaviest point. So we're spinning right now, and we have Antarctica, you know, not on the bottom, off to the side by 500 miles, and the ice in the north, which is really heavy. Actually, the whole continental shelf of the United States is rising right now as the ice and everything melts in the North Pole areas. That's why with all the water ice that's melting, you don't see the ocean coming over the docks. I mean, right? They say, well, water levels have risen 3 feet. Where?
Right.
They're not 3 feet, so they're not at the top of the dock right now because the continental shelf is lifting because it doesn't have the weight of the ice on it. But you got the extra weight in the south. So now let's say this thing just straightens itself out. We take a hard left southwest for 500 miles in a minute, you know, or whatever, a couple of hours, and all of a sudden you get the ocean, which the way we spin to the west and the wind comes from the west to the east. Well, that would be California getting hit with a 1,000-foot tidal wave.
That would, like, wouldn't that just rush over the whole United States, wouldn't it?
Jump out of the ocean basin. Yeah, that would be the scenario of a pole shift that could happen. That I would think that because it moves 500 miles, the water has to move at least 500 miles, then plus some until it dies out from the force. So, I mean, you could conceivably have the ocean go right across and die out somewhere in Chicago or something, you know, and then, you know, start to recede over 100 years.
So I was always thankful that I was on the East Coast.
Yeah,
I figured, like, Nevada was going to be oceanfront property eventually.
Because, yeah, California was supposed to drop off.
Right. Where's the San Andreas Fault? Why won't that happen first?
Yeah. Well, you know, that was what Edgar Casey said. You know, Edgar Casey said that when he went into one of his trances and looked into the future, he said what he saw in 2012, he said he saw those solar flares frying everything, because that actually happened, I think, in 1859 with the what do they call those wires, Morse code lines, the way they would send messages and stuff. So he said he saw that happening again in 2012, and he also saw California and Japan dipping into the Pacific Ocean.
That's just crazy.
Yeah, well,
there's no good story. I mean, every aspect you turn, all the different cultures or people have talked about it.
I know. I mean, that's the thing that's scary, is that everybody, and you know what, you know, when you look at it, like the way we just started this conversation, you know, you go back, you know, when you mentioned leap year, and I said, well, if you go back, the calendar is 25,800 years. So if you go back 26,000 years, you get the start of the Ice Age, right? I'm not able to find anything in 50,000 BC other than the Air Force in one of their physics manuals said that, you know, UFOs have been visiting the planet for at least 50,000 years. But I can't find a natural disaster. And that would be two cycles back of the Mayan calendar. But if you go back one more, three cycles, there was another ice age. We had an ice age 25,000 years ago and 75,000 years ago. We also had a super volcano that blew 72,000 years ago. So you got two disasters that happened three cycles ago, one that happened one cycle ago, and now we're going into that next period where, you know, the Mayans don't say anything's going to happen. They just say a new cycle starts.
Right, and that's everybody who's, I guess, the more spiritual side of the people. I don't want to call them New Agers, but, you know, the people who are, well, kind of you, Marty.
Yeah,
new beginning doesn't mean it's an ending of anything.
Right, a new energy, yeah, a new beginning, a new energy shift.
Because you talked about the Indigo Children and the Crystal Children and all that stuff that are being, you know, that's another, I guess, twist on it, too. I want to go with Gene Dixon's prediction. If I could have a choice of all of them, I want to go with the Antichrist coming in 2012.
Yeah,
because then I know at least there's like some time that you got to go through tribulation or anything else. It buys us more time, seven more years before the end times.
They've already said that most of the four horsemen have already come, so that we're just waiting for the last one. So, you know.
Well, here's another interesting fact, because that was back to back. I love Nostradamus, but I've also Saint Malachi's prophecy. I'm very familiar with, and I'm familiar with the current pope. Is the second to last pope. There's only one after him. So if he should die before December and they elect another pope, he's the last pope, and his prophecies were right.
Yeah, so I mean, that's incredible.
Everybody
but if you were just talking, didn't I just see in the news that river in China turned red, and they don't know why.
Yes, I did. I saw that. Yeah.
I missed that one.
This week, it was this week. One of the main rivers through China, there by one of their cities, and it was red. And I saw a picture of it. It was red, like almost like too much iron or rust color red. In the whole river turned red. They don't know why.
Wow. Now, speaking of like the consciousness change, that whole thing, we were starting to go down that road. I mean, that's because that's more of a positive thing. You know, you talk about something that we all kind of have mentioned about. We only use 10% of our brain. What was the purpose of the other like 90%? Obviously, there's something there.
Right.
We just haven't maybe unlocked it yet. And the indigo children, the crystal children, all those people that are, you know, seem to be born with different abilities.
Like using more parts of their brain.
Right. Exactly. Yeah. I think of the X-Men or the mutants. It's like are they the evolution of Homo sapien? Preparing. Well, is that the next step?
There was something in the paper this week also that said that other 97% was not junk DNA. That other 97% is actually used for your immune system and a whole bunch of other things. So, and that was just this week also. I saw that article saying that now they're saying it's not just junk. But either way, I mean, if we only use 8 to 10% of our brain capacity and only, you know, 3% of our DNA right now they know has any purpose, it tells you that we have a lot more ability than we're actually using. We're very infantile in our development. So there is if you think about it, every so many years we need to evolve if you believe in evolution and not genetic engineering, right? So part of this is saying that... you know, people are going to start to evolve. There's going to be a shift in their consciousness, and people are going to start to becoming less materialistic. They're going to start bucking up against the male-dominated society and you know, going to war and all of that stuff. But here's the cool thing. You know, they say that when you're going to start having dreams that actually come true. You'll see loved ones in your dreams, you know, talking to you. Then when you're awake, you're going to hear voices. So I guess they'll be committing a lot of people, and people will be committing themselves.
Yeah, for some of us, that's already happened.
You know, when I work out at the gym, I think I talk to myself because I see these other people looking at me as I'm writing two other books, and I know I'm going through lines from the books and scenarios, so I must actually be moving my mouth because they're constantly looking at me like I'm crazy.
just telling the secrets of the universe, that's all. They don't need to know.
I'm just trying to figure things out, you know. But then they say, you know, you'll hear these voices, then you're going to see angels. I mean, that would be cool, you know. And, you know, then people are going to become this connected where you can pretty much, like, read other people's minds. And but, you know, I started thinking about that, you know, like somebody, this hot chick comes walking up to you and, you know, you're reading her mind, you know, exactly what she thinks. She knows what you think. And, you know, that's good.
That would make life a lot simpler, wouldn't it?
Yeah, it would. Yeah, it's like having Facebook right there in your face.
It would definitely cut out the whole dating scenario.
Yeah, that would be the end of Match.com.
I mean, people already believe that universal consciousness is what we go to after we die. I mean,
exactly.
So maybe it's actually reconnecting with. I mean, what the Buddhists believe and all that, reconnecting with the source.
Right.
See, I think we're very primitive, and I think that ability's there. And like you said, I think when the body dies, the spirit and the mind stays active, and that type of stuff goes on. And, you know, we are so, like, you know, even like you look at the light spectrum, I think we see 3 or 4% of the light spectrum. You could have all kinds of things, you know, right around us, and we don't see them. You know, so there could be spirits, there could be 10 trillion, you know, spirit. Well, there's been 8 billion people on this planet. There's 7 billion now. 8 billion have lived prior to us in the whole history of humanity. Maybe all 8 billion of them are walking around. We just can't see them and hear them because our minds are so primitive and closed, and maybe you get to this next stage where you're able to make those type of contacts, you know? But here's the thing I was thinking about. But, you know, I was thinking about the UFO side of things, and, you know, I remember, you know, when they talked about the Roswell crash, they said that the creatures in there were not, you know, there were no controls in the ship. They had a helmet that they wore, and they use their minds to control the craft, you know? So, you know, it kind of makes me wonder, maybe that's our next stage where we can control, you know, electronics with our brain, you know, we're able to do that, which that's all cool. But the other thing that I start to worry about, you go out, I don't know, 20, 30, 50,000 years, and if you got this connection, then you know somebody's going to have a stronger mind than somebody else. Right. You're going to be able to make people do things that, you know, you're going to be able to control them and do things. That, and then you get into this hive mentality. That's the thing that scares me. Because, you know, when they talk with UFOs about, you know, the insectoids, the insect-type creatures that are out there, they're all controlled. It's a hive mentality, and they're getting their signals from a real strong one, you know. So, I don't know, maybe that's just our evolution. This is where it goes, you know. You start with telepathy, and then you start getting, you know, we can control everything, you know, turn the lights on in your house, turn them off, put the TV on, you know, read people's minds. But then you get to the point where somebody, even if it's artificially, you know, induced into a person, they're able to control people.
You know, in the book too, you talk about the Tibetan monks' prediction of extraterrestrials saving the Earth in 2012.
Yeah, you know, that was one of the reasons I got into ufology. What was that, 15, 17 years ago? I started writing this 2012 thing back in 96. And as I started researching it, I came across these other cultures that talked about these star people and people from space coming down and giving them the technology. The Tibetan monks were one, the Mayans, the Hopi Indians. And, you know, as a side note, that was really how I got involved in ufology was, as I was researching the book, I said, you know what, I've got to now look into this UFO thing because it goes back forever. And you know what happened? The more I looked, the more I found. You just keep finding more documents and more information. But, you know, the Tibetan monks, that was interesting. They actually said that these extraterrestrials have been here. They've interfered in our development, I mean, in a good way. They've prevented things from happening. You know, my question would have been, why didn't they prevent Hitler? But maybe there was a purpose to that. But the Tibetans say that they will intercede, especially if it does anything environmentally to destroy the planet, a nuclear war, that type of stuff,
right.
That they would intercede and on our behalf, and they would make themselves known, and it wouldn't be a scary event.
You mentioned a nuclear war between China, India, and Russia.
Yeah, well, I mean, you know, I've read that too, that there's going to be this push. You know, let's say the United States, we have enough oil and gas and everything for about 400 years. Funny how that all of a sudden comes to light after they ran gas prices and oil prices up. But they don't have that over in, India. Well, you think about it, India's going to have more people than China, or they just passed them, or they will pass them in the next year or two. Each of those countries with 1.4 billion people. I mean, we got 320 million. They got 1.4. They got a billion more people than us each. You know, and little Russia is sitting there with 110 million people looking at these other two countries that have 10 times the population needing their resources. So, you know, at some point...
Bad spot to be.
Yeah. I mean, but the only problem is that Russia has all the nuclear weapons, so they sleep pretty good at night. So, I mean, that's a possibility, and that's what the Tibetan monks said. They see this conflict starting there between India, China, and Russia. Although I don't see that happening in the next 3 months. I can see that as a scenario, you know, 3 to 5 years out. You'd almost have to have, you know, like something happen in the Middle East, you know, an asteroid strike or something that you can't get any oil out of there. We're producing our own oil. Russia has oil also more than we do, and now China and India need it, so they go after Russia, you know. But I really don't see something like that happening in the next 3 months.
Yeah, we need one really bad thing to happen. I mean, even something, a solar flare that takes out an electrical grid in a country,
mm-hmm.
You're 3 days away from chaos.
You know? Yeah, absolutely. I'm telling you, it's funny when you mentioned, as we started talking about, you know, having your bullets and your guns. I got a thing in the mail today from Gander Mountain, and I got so tied up. They're having a big sale on ammunition, and since I retired, I'm home. I wanted to run over this afternoon and buy some, and I forgot all about it. You know, now tomorrow's crowded. I got plans for the weekend, but you know, you're going to have these groups of armed people going around. You know, once you run out of food, you know, what's going to happen? There's enough paramilitary, ex-military, gangs. They're just going to, you know, 60 of them are going to go down your street, door to door, raping, stealing, taking all your food, taking the women. What are you going to do about it, you know? You can have little pockets of guys with three guns shooting back at them, you know.
I mean, but that's the most scary part to me, really.
Could you get some more guns so we could come to your house?
I'm pretty good right now. Yeah.
A lot of guys may just offer their wives up and say, here, take her.
Put her out front and say, here you go.
But like, yeah, put her out front and say, please, take her. But, I mean, that, you know, that's what's really going to happen, though. You know, if we lose all the power, how do you defend against that? So I'm in my house with a couple of weapons and there's 60 people. They're going to burn me out. You know, if they get too much resistance from me, they're going to burn me out.
Right.
So then siege. What do? I got to get out the back door and run?
Right. All they have to do is siege to the house, and it's a matter of time before you have to come out.
Yeah.
Yeah, and they always forget to go to the back of the house. They only siege the front of the house.
I'm in a row home, so I'm pretty good. So they got that come down the alley. I got a little narrower shot than them.
You'd have to go down around the corner.
It's like the hot gates, you know? It's got a small little area to narrow them down.
But imagine being on the East Coast. I mean, there's 80 million people from Boston to D.C., you know, all packed in there along I-95. And you don't think in a week when all the food spoils and runs out and everybody had their big barbecues and they're hungry now, or you can't even get good, you know, water if the water's not pumping. I mean, holy Moses. Anybody in a metropolitan area is in for it. You know, and maybe that's why the government started these FEMA internment camps. They have them all around the country. They're stocking up on ammunition. They passed laws that absolutely violate the Constitution that you can, you know, if anybody's rioting or starting, that's a terroristic act, they just grab you, throw you in an internment camp for the next 3 years if you survive, you know?
Right.
It gives you the feeling that they know something's coming. Now, whether it's, I tell you, the one that scares me is that super volcano. I saw something this week also, one of those, I get a bunch of emails from these different groups, and I don't read them all, or I don't click on them all on YouTube, but, you know, one of them was saying that there's a smell of sulfur in Southern California all the way to Arizona.
Well, Yellowstone is a super volcano.
Yellowstone is the super volcano that they're talking about. Right. Yeah, I've heard shows on that about how they think that's going to explode at some point.
Well, there's three super volcanoes. Yellowstone is up north, you know, Wyoming, up in that area. But this article I saw was talking about California to Arizona, which there happen to be two other super volcanoes down there, really on the Mexican border with us. Those are not active. They're more dormant right now. But, I'm reading this article about the smell of sulfur that people are getting. But like you said, the Yellowstone super volcano, that's active. I mean, in January, I read an article that said there were 21 tremors in January.
Yeah.
And, you know, the reason you got all faithful is because the magma is causing that steam to blow out of there. That's why you have that. And, there was an interesting story that how they came upon this whole supervolcano thing was these guys were up there. They every 5 years they go up there and they vacation. I'm going back about 20 years. When they went up there to fish, the lake was somewhere else. The dock was standing there, but the lake was to the right. They said, how's that possible? How's the lake move? So they went, and they had money. They were doctors and lawyers. They went and got all the surveys. They resurveyed that area, and they found that the earth had risen 6 feet. It swelled up from the volcano, and it just moved the lake over.
Wow.
And that's when they started looking, and I imagine with our satellites now, you know, from above you can see it. You know, they can see the area that's hot and throwing off a signal. And, it's 40 miles by 60 miles. So it's probably bigger than the whole state of Delaware. It's about half the size of Long Island or Puerto Rico. And this thing just blows up when it goes. I mean, I think I don't remember if it was 400 or 4,000 times stronger, probably 4,000 times stronger than Mount St. Helens that blew up in Seattle.
Yeah.
And it's, boom! Imagine half of Long Island blowing, shooting up all this ash and magma into the upper stratosphere. But you got to say, maybe they know something's going to happen. See, if this thing with the government didn't just come up, you know, I'd be less prone to say, you know, it's 2012, maybe, maybe not. A lot of predictions, maybe the calendar's off, I don't know. But, you know, we get to 2012, December of 2011, they passed this National Defense Act where you can arrest Americans on their own soil without a hearing. And they start buying up ammunition, and they have FEMA internment camps.
Now, you mentioned, too, some observatories or some monitoring of deep space objects have been actually blocked from public access.
Yeah, you know, in this whole research, and I started looking into the asteroid side of things, because, you know, I found out about supervolcanoes and the magnetic fields and, you know, pole shifts. And I said, well, you know, what's the most likely thing to happen? You know, it's probably an asteroid strike is the most likely thing. So I'm out at Arizona, maybe Winslow, where they have that big crater. Mm-hmm. You probably know what it is. Yeah. There's that, you know, probably an asteroid the size of a bus hit, and it creates this 1 mile wide crater. But I went there with my kids, and it's really cool because you can it shows you all the near Earth objects and where then their path and when they're going to pass by. So I see one there. And this is probably in 05 or so, because they discovered this asteroid Apophis in 04. And I see it there, Apophis. And they show the trajectory, and it just misses the moon on the inside. Mm-hmm. On the inside towards Earth, not on the outside of the moon, on the inside. I said, you know how close that is? And it was closer to Earth than it was to the moon when they showed the trajectory of it. So I started looking at this Apophis asteroid. It's a half a mile wide. If it hits, you know, it would take out a good-sized state. You know, it would take out the path on it is to hit Nigeria. So it would take out the whole country. It would probably take out the eastern seaboard. It would take out most of Texas, you know, depending on where it would have hit. But right now it's coming in along the down around Central America and across. And if it were to hit, it would hit in Nigeria, more around, you know, the equator, let's say, in that area. But, you know, so then I'm looking into this stuff, and I'm telling people at work in 08 it passed by, right? So it's on Friday the 13th, Friday, April 13th, 2008. This asteroid passes by. It's on the other side of the moon because it gets closer every 7 years. And I told everybody at work, I said, you got to look at the paper Saturday and read about this asteroid Apophis. I mean, this is unbelievable. This thing's getting closer and closer every 7 years. I couldn't find one article written on it. I checked both papers here. I went online to USA Today, everything. I Googled it. Not one article was written on a half-mile-wide asteroid that's getting closer and closer. So then I said, you know what? You know, when you do this whole UFO stuff, you get very paranoid about conspiracies and stuff. I said, How could they not write about this? Then it was a little bit after that, maybe 09, I think it was, I read that we turned off our satellite that amateur astronomers use to track meteors and bolides and near-Earth objects coming in. So now they can't see anything that's coming in. And the reason behind it was that the Air Force said if you're using the satellite, it's the same satellite is used to monitor nuclear explosions.
Okay.
So If you monitor a meteor that comes in, you'll know where the satellite is. You could just triangulate it and shoot the satellite down. So they didn't want the enemy to know where the satellite was, so they shut it down. But then, you know, here I am thinking, oh, yeah, right, that was the reason. You know, so
you got... Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Sure it was.
Yeah, sure it was. So, I mean, you know, you get this stuff, and like I said, you start putting two and two together, and it starts to become a scary scenario. And, you know, I worry about the supervolcano, and I worry about an asteroid strike. You know, I don't think the pole shift is really something that's going to happen. You know, we know the magnetic field could happen, and you're talking, you know, I think I saw something to be over $1 trillion to get the power grid back up. And that ain't going to happen in like 3 weeks. You're year.
They were just talking on the news. Actually, it wasn't broadcast, but it was on, I think, MSNBC's website. That one of the things Obama administration's been doing silently is reconstructing how the power grid connects. See, before, you could take out one power grid, it was like a domino effect. The whole country could go down. Right. Now they're separating them into regions. So if one got hit by an EM pulse or something like that, the whole country doesn't go down. So what are they now? Why are they doing that all of a sudden? And he's only been president for, 3 years. That's a hell of a rush job to redo all that and do it quietly.
Yeah.
What do they know that's coming? I mean, well, NASA's pretty open about the solar flares.
Yeah. And I think that if you had to rank them all, that's probably the one that we know, scientifically is very, very possible is to get the big. I saw a picture online, I think it was last week, and it showed the Earth, and they moved the Earth up close to the sun. And the sun is gigantic, I don't know how many times bigger than the Earth. But then they showed the solar flare. Holy Moses, the solar flare is like 50 times wider than the entire Earth, if there was to be one that came right at us. Now, most of the time, it misses us. It spits out in different directions. We might just get the tail of it, the side of it, whatever. But if one hits us directly, this thing is gigantic, a solar flare. And the fact that our magnetic field is so weak, you could have some major, major problems with the radiation and frying all of our electronics. So they got to harden all of the power grid, and that's not something that you just do overnight. Right. But they're doing it quietly.
Mm-hmm. Now, doesn't the fact that we're going to be aligned up with the sun in a way where we're going to be right dead on target, right in December, the second week of December, where the high point of solar flares, and then you have the alignment of the planets and all that stuff. Doesn't that fits right into all the prophecies like of the Hopi and the Mayans?
It does.
Too close to comfort.
Yeah, I mean, you got to remember though that the planets are so far apart; they don't have any effect on each other. So the fact that we line up with Jupiter, Mars, Venus, Mercury, it doesn't really do anything. It just looks cool in the picture, but it doesn't. There's no effect on gravity when that happens. But really, the question I ask is, how did the Mayans know this 1,000 years ago? How did they know it? How did they built this? They were primitive people, and all of a sudden, they tell a story of a guy who comes walking out of the ocean. He's a Caucasian male with an elongated skull, with blonde hair and blue eyes. He comes walking out of the ocean into their community and starts giving them all this knowledge. Coco Khan. He gave them astronomy. He gave them mathematics. They're building expansion bridges over the rivers. They're doing dentistry. They're doing all of this stuff upon his arrival. Where'd he come from? They said he came from the stars and he left. He was there, gave them the calendar and everything, and left. And, the scary thing is the Mayans start with the date of 12/21/2012, and they work backwards. So, they didn't say, okay, from this day on, it's 986 A.D., we're going to go out, 5,125 years. No, they started with that date.
Hold on, this is something I never heard before. Yeah. Because always hear that they ran out, that's the day they ended their calendar. You're saying that's the day they started their calendar and worked back.
And worked it backwards.
So did somebody from the future go back and give them that date
so
that they could alert us?
There's no there's no reason to go dates beyond that.
Just think about it. You got these primitive people. This guy says this 12/21/2012 date, you work it backwards every 5,125 years. And then there's three calendars. There's another one that's on 25,800 years. There's another one. So they go to that date. They create this dial with three calendars where, obviously the inner dial is the shorter calendar, the outside dial is the longer calendar, and you turn them and they're perfect, who's going to do that?
Right.
Mm-hmm. How would they know that the Earth, when it spins, has that wobble, and every 72 years it changes its rotation by 1%? And it takes 25,800 years to do a complete rotation of the Earth, so you're back to the same place where you see the same stars in the sky. How could they possibly know that?
To me, that's always been, when you throw out the facts and look at them like that, it's an impossibility. Mm-hmm. There is zero chance of them knowing that by them figuring that out on their own.
No.
Yeah, and it was the same thing with the Dogon tribe in Africa, in Mali, in Africa. And they said the same thing. There is no way they had the knowledge of the Sirius star system. I mean, these people, when they were discovered by the British, I don't know what it was, 1929, 1912, whatever it was, they were more primitive than the Mayans were 1,000 years ago. This was the most primitive of primitive. And so when the British discover them during their colonialization period that the president doesn't like, let's not do politics because we could start talking about why Obama is hardening the – maybe he knows it's the Democratic areas on the east and west coast that are going to lose power, so he's hardening the grid. No, we don't want to go there. But you don't want to lose the votes come 6 weeks from now. But you know, so you got this tribe in Mali that they're telling the once they figure out the language and can communicate, they're telling the British explorers about this twin star system. They point to the sky. They say, "See that right there? You can see one star, right?" They said, "No, there's three right there. That's a twin star, and then there's another one that's a dwarf star behind it. You can't see it." And they said that these people came from there and came down and gave them whatever knowledge they had, and said that's where they were from. So then it goes like, you know, so they write it down, they document it, it's in the British Museum. And, you know, 50 years later, when we have telescopes, I think it was probably 1980 or something, we look at the Sirius star system and say, holy cow, twin star system with a dwarf star also. So it's, there's three stars there, exactly what the Dogons told us. How do they know that? How could – there's no way they know it unless they were told it.
That's just – again, it's mind-boggling when you think of it.
Yeah. Here's something from the religious side. I know we're running out of time here. You know, I'm reading this book on the Fatima secret, you know, the three girls that saw the Virgin Mary. Yeah. And even when you read that book, you start to question whether that was a UFO encounter and not the religious encounter. But this Cardinal Ratzinger in 1996, on the 79th anniversary, finally comes out and makes a statement. And here's his statement, and you can apply this to 2012. And I think this is the policy that's used right now with the government and religious and everything. This is what he says. When one reads that the oceans will flood entire portions of land, that human beings will die within minutes and in millions, then one should not desire publication of the secret. Knowledge means responsibility. It is dangerous when someone only wishes to satisfy his curiosity if he is not prepared to do something about his discoveries, or if he is convinced we can do nothing to prevent the prophesied disaster from happening. You can't handle the truth. They ain't going to tell you.
Yep.
Yeah, that's exactly that's what it is.
And that's that's Pope Benedict right now.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
John, thank you for coming on. We're definitely going to have you come back on again. Like I said, we can do like 20 shows probably just talking to you. You want to give a real quick plug to the Philadelphia event you got coming up in a couple weeks?
Yeah. It's at the Sheridan Bucks County over by the Oxford Valley Mall, September 28th to 30th. We got a great lineup. Richard Dolan, Travis Walton, Grant Cameron, Stephen Bassett, et cetera, Peter Robbins, Frank Frasino, myself. I think it's the best lineup out there right now, and it's only like $40 to get into. It's a three-day conference, and it's over in Bucks County, September 28th to 30th. Just go to MUFONPA.com.
Awesome. I know we're going to try to be out there.
Well, definitely. Yeah.
All right, John, but we will be talking to you soon.
Thank you.
Thank you very much.
Let's talk paranormal next time, the stuff that's happened to me in my life. That'll be interesting.
All right, yes. We'll work on that. Taryn will set it up for us.
Definitely.
Take care, John.
All right.
Hey, everybody. We're going to have a bunch of guests. We have, I guess we're going to consider her our show's producer now because she's setting up. We have Ben Hansen. Who else do we have on deck coming up?
Bruce Tango. I got Carolyn Doherty for you.
Okay. John Zavis was just waiting for a date.
Yes. I actually called him, left him a message, so I'm waiting for him to give me a call back.
You can get back to John here and reschedule him again, too.
Yes, definitely.
That's right. All right. We're going to be handing the show off. I assume there's a show behind us. I'm not sure. But if not, still stay tuned because there's going to be shows later on tonight. And we'll see you next week.
Yep, see you later. Have a good week.
Take care. Bye-bye.